Now, New South Wales Energy Minister Matt Keane unveiled his ambitious new electricity infrastructure roadmap, which aims to, among other things, just about halve the state's electricity emissions. Now, we know the Liddell coal-fired power station in the Hunter is set to close around 2023 and that energy supply will need to be made up somewhere. This $32 billion infrastructure roadmap promises a lot of things. Deliver about 12 gigawatts of new transmission renewable energy zones by 2030. Contribute to the state government's net zero plan by delivering 90 million tonnes of reduced carbon emissions by 2030. And on top of all of that, we're told, we'll save around $130 a year on average in our household electricity bills. But of course, as you've come to expect, nowhere in the roadmap is the word nuclear mentioned. It's almost like kryptonite to all of us that want to pay for cheap power. It's just never there. Robert Parker, who I've spoken to many times over the years, is the founder of the Nuclear for Climate Australia and a past president of the Australian Nuclear Association. And I'm delighted to say he's on the line. How are you, Robert?
Very good. Good to speak again, Luke, on
you too.
Really interesting topic.
Indeed. Now, I have no faith in any government minister based on modelling coming forward and saying, here it is, a absolutely foolproof, this can't go wrong, electricity plan for the future that'll somehow reduce the temperature and at the same time reduce our power bills. And the one thing missing here, it would seem to me, is baseload power. Do you have any confidence that the minister might deliver what he's setting out to deliver here at all?
I'm sorry, Luke, but I do not have confidence, and my lack of confidence is based upon modelling done by respected research outfits at MIT and the OECD, and they say that if you do not include nuclear in your low-carbon future, you're going to have double the prices. Mm. So, no, Luke, I don't have any faith. We've only got to look at one recent example in Australia, Snowy Hydro 2. There we have 2 gigawatts of power to come out of that storage, slated under previous Prime Minister Turnbull to cost $2 billion. That project now, just the construction, the first construction part's $5.1 billion. Add in $2 billion for the transmission, plus the cost overruns that we know that are occurring, that could go $8 to $10 billion. Mm. These estimates these people are putting together for projects that have never been tried before in the world, they're dreaming, and we really need to go to energy systems that have got a proven precedent.
Yeah, indeed. So nuclear is a bit of a dirty word, isn't it? The main, even if you even start to think about it, it seems to me they come looking for you, particularly in the body politic. We had someone from the coalition last year talking about nuclear as an alternative, and as you might imagine, almost straight away, the opposition dialed up the rhetoric and, of course, they're going to put one of these in your backyard and the world's going to come to an end. Can we just dispel a few myths? Perhaps you can just walk us through what nuclear is like today to what it might have been even 20 or 30 years ago.
All right, well, let's just go to that, because the nuclear power plants that have been built in our Western nations have no record of loss of life. In fact, they have been shown to be the safest form of energy that we have got, bar none. Their track record is tremendous in terms of, in fact, they've even saved, it's been calculated, Columbia University in the US, that they've saved nearly 2 million lives from people who otherwise would have suffered the effects of coal plants. So nuclear saves lives by reducing particulate emissions, and it's a very, very safe and clean form of energy. Now, the newer plants that are coming online, they have systems they call passive cooling, whereby if something should eventuate to cause a problem with the reactor, these things shut themselves down and they cool themselves down without any human intervention. So the kinds of things that happened at Fukushima would not happen in these modern plants, because they just have sufficient water around them to keep themselves particularly cool and get rid of all that waste heat.
Mm. What about internationally? Because we are naive to think that what we do here is what happens elsewhere. There are significant countries around the world where nuclear is a significant source of energy.
And I think we really need to be taking a leaf out of our Commonwealth partners. Let's think about some of these, because we look at the size of Australia and we go over to Canada and we find that the state of Ontario and Canada has got the world's, amongst the world's lowest emissions. Canada developed their own nuclear power fleet, their own technology. We go to England. They've developed, in Britain, they've developed their own power plants, and now we've got Rolls-Royce about to announce 16 new small modular reactors to be built in the United Kingdom. So our Commonwealth partners have commanded nuclear technology, developed it, and enhanced their industrial base of their own societies doing it. Even South Africa is now going towards it with one of the plants that we can talk about. So really, Australia has got to summon up the courage and get rid of this propaganda against nuclear. Mm. It is safe, it is clean, it is low cost, and above all, it's reliable. We will not have to put the white flag up on our economy if we go nuclear.
Yeah.
We will not have to ask industries like BlueScope or any of our major industries or aluminium smelters to wind back because the energy's not there.
Mm.
If we go to nuclear, those industries will be assured and the jobs will be assured.
This $32 billion roadmap in New South Wales, it's a lot of money. What would you be able to get for $32 billion in the area of nuclear power generation, Robert?
Well, look, you brought up in your first statements that the minister's stating that we're going to halve our emissions with this. In other words, New South Wales is going to go from, say, 900 grams of carbon per kilowatt hour down to maybe 400, okay? If we went, if we spent exactly the same money on nuclear power plants, we could build 25 small nuclear power plants in Australia and we could get our emissions down under 50 grams. We could make an eightfold, tenfold improvement on what the minister's offering. We could fully decarbonise it, but better still, those jobs would go into places like the mid-north coast, or it would go up around the Upper Hunter, or we could have them in the Illawarra. We could have them in areas right on our grid where communities currently exist that could benefit from the jobs and the manufacturing future around them. It would be a terrific renewal for those communities who may have to lose coal industries in the future,
yeah,
but they could transition to this.
Yeah, those jobs that they say would be available in the renewable sector, I mean, they're fake jobs, as I've said here many times. Well, what are we going to get? We're going to get a coal miner who's earning maybe 140, 150 grand a year to put down whatever tools he or she might use and then give them a bottle of Windex and a Chuck Super Wipe and get them out there cleaning solar panels. I mean, it's an absolute bloody joke, and someone's got to pull these politicians up when they trot this rot out. And if the ALP want to understand what their problem with is in high-vis communities, it's exactly that. People aren't buying it. So what would these jobs be? Because if we have people mining for coal now, we have significant reserves in Australia, do we not?
We do. But I've sat across the table from coal power plant operators,
yep,
in the Latrobe. I've looked at some of the smartest tradespeople I've ever come across. These are the men who really run these plants. And those sorts of people could be retrained. They've got massive skills. I mean, you've only got to sit across the table from a bunch of plant operators to realise what a tremendous talent pool there is in Australia. And those people could be retrained into these sorts of plants. So, but more than that, the plants would last for 60 or 80 years. So not only could those people be retrained, their sons and daughters, grandsons and great-grandchildren could also go on in those same communities and work in those plants, just as happened in nations like France.
Right.
It gives community stability.
Yeah.
You ask a guy, as you said, a bottle of Windex and a wipe, and ask him to go out to Dubbo. But he lives in the mid-north coast. What do you want to go to Dubbo for? I mean, give me a break. I grew up in the town. Lovely town.
Yes.
But We've got to keep community stability.
Yeah. You talked before about modular generation. So what does that look like? We're not talking here, are we, about these large plants that we've probably become accustomed to hearing about over the years. These are smaller facilities, are they, Robert, that maybe power a couple of communities? How does it work?
No, they're quite powerful. For example, one of the type that I'm talking about is the General Electric BWX300. And this is a beautiful bit of gear, and it could power about 250,000-300,000 people. So one of these could power, say, the best part of Wollongong. Now, unlike what we're used to seeing, a large concrete dome on the horizon, the large dome of a nuclear power plant, these sit in a silo in the ground. And they've got just a normal rectangular building that's holding the turbines. Nothing particularly spectacular about it. They're a low-rise building on the horizon, and most of the plant, the nuclear reactor and that, is protected in a silo within the ground. So they really present a very small footprint. But more to the point, these newer plants are using about half the concrete and steel per unit of output of the larger plants. So they have really made massive savings in the materials required to go in them.
Gosh.
And because of that, they've become much cheaper. And this is where the rubber hits the road. These plants can produce electricity about the same cost as wind and solar. But wind and solar has got to have storage. It's got to have batteries, or it's got to have pumped hydro. It's got to have something. When you add that to wind and solar, those plants, that wind and solar renewable scheme will cost about twice the amount of cost per unit of output compared to the nuclear power plants. So these power plants will be low cost, reliable, 24/7 power.
Gee. I remember at one point talking about this, and one of the problems was the lead-in time required to establish or to get one of those plants operative. What is it now? Is it still, I think it was near 20 years at one point. What is it now?
Okay. The actual plant construction, the first of these particular ones, the BWX300, should be built 2024, finished 2027. But the general run-of-the-mill nth-of-a-kind fleet reactor will take about 2 years to build. If Australia wanted to get stuck right in, we could be doing those within the current decade. We could get stuck in and make some sensible decisions about our energy future, and we could be into these within this current decade if we had the will. And we could put them all together within about another decade. So they would be a very fast rollout, because when you mentioned the word nuclear leak, modular, and what we've got is we have the reactor and we have various mechanical systems, and they come in one big module produced in a factory, loaded into the ground in the concrete that's poured in situ, and then we've got the turbine sitting in a turbine hall, nothing particularly different to, for example, a gas turbine or any other sort of plant. So the whole thing, a lot of it, is manufactured in a factory, brought to site, loaded into place, and off it goes.
What about uranium? I think we are, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong, the second largest exporter of uranium on the planet. So is the uranium that we mine here suitable for power generation, or does something have to happen to it?
Perfectly. Well, the uranium that we mine has to go through what they call enrichment. In other words, you've got to improve its reactivity to enable it to operate in a nuclear power plant. And that enrichment would happen probably in nations like the United States or France or perhaps Japan. So it would be enriched in those. But as South Korea does, they don't do enrichment. But what we could bring that enriched material back to Australia, and we could make our own fuel here. In fact, if we got into a large fleet of these plants, which is what I envisage, we would do as the South Koreans do, make our own fuel from material that's enriched overseas and make our own fuel rods, all the assemblies, and they would go straight into the plant. So that would be a great new industry for the nation. Yeah. In time, if we chose, yeah. we could go into enrichment, but at present there's so much capacity around the world that that would probably be a long way off.
What about waste, Robert? Is there much waste from this sort of power generation, and what would you do with that?
Okay. You're probably putting out around about 8 tonnes of material a year out of one of these plants that I'm talking about. So it would probably fit in a small truck. That's the amount that comes out per year.
Gosh.
What would you do with it?
Yeah.
Well, that's not a big mass of material to start with. The options in the future are these. You can either put it into deep repositories or boreholes. At present, we're looking at perhaps going down a kilometre into the ground into a borehole, or as the Finnish people are choosing to do, to put it down in a mine about 500 or 600 metres underground. That's a terrible waste, because in the future, this used fuel, which I call it, not waste, is in fact fuel for a future fleet of what we call fast reactors. And that's what the French and that's what the Chinese are looking to do in the future, is actually use that. Now, when you burn that fuel in what they call fast reactors, its reactivity after you pull it out of the reactor lasts for about 300 years, and then it's safe. So we can substantially reduce the amount of waste. And I should mention, if we burn it in those fast reactors, you get about another 50 times more energy out of it. Hmm. So in effect, the world has got an infinite amount of uranium if we choose to go down that route.
Yeah.
So I would see the material at the end of the day going into fast reactors after a few decades. That would be the best outcome. But the worst, if we had to, you'd put it underground. It's never going to come back. That's a perfectly logical, sensible way to do it, as the South Australian Royal Commission found under Kevin Scass, the Royal Commissioner. And they looked into that and found it to be an eminently suitable way to handle it.
You've been arguing for nuclear forever, it seems. Have you noticed any improvement in the way the body politic deals with nuclear power generation? I mean, if there was ever going to be a time where perhaps we might embrace it, it would be now, where the so-called need to cut emissions is pretty widely accepted. But the original question, is political attitude changing, or are we still stuck in the, if we do that, you know, we're going to kill Australia?
For a long time, when I have spoken to individual politicians, especially on the coalition side, you see a significant amount of individual support for nuclear energy. I found that with the Victorian, New South Wales and federal government representatives, there is significant support. Put them collectively into a cabinet and they go weak at the knees.
There you go.
It's a scandal, quite frankly.
Yeah.
And they haven't got the gumption. But I really wish, Luke, that they would look at what Britain, Canada and even South Africa have got the guts to do. And it's not a big decision. What we're really fighting here is an unresolved, non-scientific fear. It's an anxiety from a long-term propaganda. The truth of the matter is people do not lose lives due to nuclear energy in the types of reactors that are being built in our Western nations. It is a safe form of energy, and we've got to get over ourselves.
Well said. Robert Parker, the founder of Nuclear for Climate Australia. You can look at more online if you go to nuclearforclimate.com.au. Robert, thank you so much again for your time. We will speak again, no doubt, mate.
And thank you for your continued interest, Luke. And I hope the listeners have got some questions. I'd really invite any questions, and we can come back in the fullness of time and respond to them.
Fantastic. Well, look, let's just thank you, Robert, very much indeed. Let's just pursue what Robert said there. If you've got a question, if you've got a concern, Why don't we try and get Robert, who's agreed to appear again on the program, even early one Sunday or Saturday morning, and we'll throw it open, throw the lines open for you to ask questions. In the meantime, if you have one, drop me a note. You know what to do. Go to the website, drop me an email, or just send us an SMS, and we will get Robert back on the show in a few weeks, particularly if you've got questions that you'd like answered.